Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, hour two, lively first hour. We're in L.A. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, FS1. Is this a blue shirt or a green shirt?
I think it's blue. Looks blue.
All right. Apparently have become colorblind this morning.
You kind of freaked me out for a second, but yeah, I think. I mean, it has hues of green, I suppose. Like light, maybe like a robin's egg or something, but I think it's blue.
Robin's egg? Is that a color?
Yeah, oh. I think so. Right? Yeah.
Oh, that's a new one. I never heard of robin's egg.
I think so.
Heard of vermilion?
Vermilion?
No, that's always a weird color to me.
It's a nice blue shirt.
Thanks. So it was good to have Joel Klatt on. College football season officially ended. And so then you go into recruiting and we go back and forth again. I did like his proposition of the, 14-team playoff and all that stuff. I just think sports, I think if you look at the history of the country, we elevate people. We try to even things. Our federal government does it. The FCC does it. That's why people are upset right now with Silicon Valley. They feel they have too much power, and it bothers us. We don't like that as a country. We don't like somebody having too much power. Our president has to deal with the Senate and Congress, and he's the president, or she's the president. And so when you have the South, which they're dominating, we get turned off by it. We get fatigued by it. I think it's an NBA problem. LeBron is so dominant. Like 15 years of LeBron running the league, and
it feels unfair. People want to be invited to the party.
That's right.
But I think specifically with college football, aside from it feeling unfair, like I don't really care too much about fair. It's just not interesting.
That's right.
The same teams every year, and while one team may feel like they're the greatest team ever, like they don't look that much different than the team that was dominant last year,
right.
Playing against other players that are now in the NFL. Like it's the same thing.
Yeah, it's increasingly repetitive content.
Yeah.
And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
And when there's blowouts, it's even worse.
I don't know what Goulet, check the rating last night, see if it did a decent rating. So we're going to do, now this is probably our last Herd hierarchy of the year until like we get into September or whatever. We'll do a few in the off season after free agency, after the draft, but this is our best, the 8 teams left in the NFL playoffs. We rank them. Here we go.
Herd hierarchy.
Time is now. Let's go.
The top 10 NFL teams according to college. Number 8.
Well, they have the best defense, in my opinion. The LA Rams, I would put at number 8. 7 straight games with multiple sacks. They've held opponents under 15 points last 5 weeks. But the problem is they're the weakest team at the most important position, quarterback. Jared Goff, broken thumb. It had swelling. And the reality, over the last 6 games, Jared Goff, 5 touchdowns, 5 picks, and they're not dynamic at all. Now, I do love Cam Akers, and I think if you can run the football against Green Bay, you can make it competitive. But at some point, they're a little slicker version of the Bears. They feel incredibly lopsided. They have an offensive coach. They have a great defense. And you're kind of a liability at quarterback, Rams number 8.
Number 7.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Tom Brady. They only have 1 win against the team with a winning record this year, and that was the Packers in week 6. They have beat up on some bad teams. Now, I do think Brady's playing well. The emergence of Antonio Brown is something. Brady's experience in this stage is good, and there's almost a break, if you can call it that. Getting to face a team that's routed you twice, it's a little bit of a break. Getting to face the Saints again instead of going up against the team you crushed at Lambeau, which I wouldn't like that at all. Brady has 200-plus passing yards in the first half in 3 straight games, so he is cooking, and that is good news for them, Tampa at 7.
Number 6.
And then it gets tight. I'd put Cleveland at 6 because they're the least experienced team left, but they're getting smarter. They're 11-0 this year when they win or tie the turnover battle. Turnovers are being diminished. They have the best offensive line remaining in the playoffs. And Baker, since week 8, 14 TDs and a pick. I think they're well-coached. I think they're smart, but I do think this weekend feels a little bit like end of the road. They felt like a playoff team, maybe a playoff win. They got it, but they just don't have a ton of experience. and they're facing the world champions next.
Number five.
Baltimore, they beat Cleveland a couple times, so they outrushed the Titans 240 yards to 50, and that's just hard to do. I think Lamar Jackson's always been dynamic, but I thought he played with a self-awareness Sunday. It wasn't about him trailing, it was about him leading. Ball security, made really good decisions, and their defense held Derrick Henry to a season-low 40 rushing yards. So they've got a lot of components for a Super Bowl team. They're dynamic at quarterback. They can own time of possession. They have a Super Bowl-winning coach. They play real defense and usually have a pass rush. I have Baltimore at five.
Number four.
New Orleans. Now, they're not going to throw the ball over the top, so there are limitations there. They held the ball, though, for 40 minutes against the Bears. That's most time of possession by any team in the wild card weekend. In the last 2 weeks, they've held opponents under 10 points. So I worry about their inability to be more than a gadget offense with Taysom Hill, Drew Brees, to Alvin Kamara. But I've said before, and I'll say it again, I believe they have the best roster in the National Football League, and both sides of the ball are filled with high-end Pro Bowl-level players.
Number three.
Kansas City. I've had them there for a while. Worst red zone defense in the NFL this year. And they rank 24th in the red zone offensively since week 12. Something's not right. Is it a lack of running game? Is it the injury to Mitchell Schwartz? Have people figured out some of their trick plays? Is it a play calling issue? Something doesn't feel right. And they are the rustiest team in the league because Patrick Mahomes took off week 17. Aaron Rodgers got a bye, but he played in week 17. So I just don't know what I'm going to get. Mahomes had five turnovers in his last three games and a completion percentage under 60%. Something isn't clicking.
Number two.
I'm going to move Buffalo down one spot because I am concerned about a lack of a pass rush. Now, some of that is the Colts' offensive line. Josh Allen's had multiple touchdowns in six straight games. They've won seven straight, longest winning streak in the NFL. I think they're explosive offensively, well-coached. They're very good situationally in the red zone on defense, special teams more than capable. But they didn't generate much of a pass rush. And I do think that could be trouble against Baltimore this weekend. If they don't force Lamar Jackson to be uncomfortable, you're going to get his dynamic athletic ability and time to throw. And that worries me, Buffalo at two.
Number one.
I think the only choice here is Green Bay. Not only the number one offense, they only turn the ball over 11 times all year. They have the second highest graded offensive line to the Cleveland Browns. And their defense in four of the last five games is emerging as a top unit, held people under 20 points. I don't see a lot of problems. Now, I do worry they are at times very reliant on Devontae Adams at wide receiver. If he got tweaked, if he got injured, it wouldn't feel like the same football team. But all in, I think Green Bay is the best team. Let's look at the board one more time. Here we go. Green Bay number one. Buffalo, Kansas City, Saints, Baltimore, Cleveland, Tampa Bay 7, and the Rams at number 8. The Rams, I said this yesterday, they've done so many things right. I mean, they have big trades of work. They've drafted really well. They got a great coach. The stadium, they've re-signed people. They had an injury to Andrew Whitworth, but they drafted a kid. He filled in. They were more than capable. But when your quarterback's struggling and not playing with confidence and the staff doesn't trust him, it just, they feel like a BB gun going up against, you know, whatever Aaron Rodgers is classified as. So I just don't see him winning there. By the way, I saw this. Like, I understand when you're young and you have money and you're talented, you're good looking, you get a little cocky. But, you know, after you lose a game and get humiliated, you should be marginally humble. I saw Chase Claypool, great receiver for the Steelers, took to TikTok Live on Monday following his team's drubbing to Cleveland. He said, bad loss, but the Browns are going to get clapped next week anyway, so it's all good. Pittsburgh's starting to wear me out. All the TikTok stars, trash talking after you get humiliated. Listen, Le'Veon Bell left. You're still noisy. Antonio Brown left. You're still noisy. Like, some of this is Big Ben. Maybe some of it's the culture created by Mike Tomlin. all the guys that were purportedly the problem have left, and you still have the best TikTok ensemble in the NFL. I don't know. There's a lot of big NFL brands right now where the brand is way better than the quality of football. The Cowboys, the Steelers, the Bears, the Eagles. The brand is bigger than a reality. And things are not going to change unless you remove the people who appear to be accepting this behavior. This is now just an underachieving, noisy franchise that lacks maturity, always wants to blame the last guy they kicked out of the town. It's Le'Veon Bell's fault. Not really. They haven't rushed the ball since he left. It's Antonio Brown's fault. It took him a while, but he's in Tampa doing just fine. Cleveland rolled you. Just stop talking. If you won, say what you want. But Cleveland rolled you in your place. A lot of your stars rested. It's not really the time. Cleveland owned it, owned you, deserved it, and I think, frankly, has a shot against Kansas City. All right, Peter King stopping by too. Andrew Whitworth, John Ritchie, former Eagle. As Joy and I were saying, I thought yesterday during the show, I'm like, okay, Eagles have a job opening. But it is interesting. The Eagles have fired Doug Peterson, won a Super Bowl. Andy Reid got to one. And Chip Kelly winning record. All after one bad year. I'm not sure if it's a great job. I'm not. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. But that is... franchises, Jacksonville, the Giants, I mean, the Niners, Kyle Shanahan's had, with Jimmy Garoppolo's injuries, bad years. Nobody's talking about Jimmy Garoppolo leaving. That's weird.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Saturday on Fox, the Rams take on Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. Coverage begins at 2:30 Eastern. Then on Sunday, Tom Brady and the Bucs square off with Drew Brees and the Saints at 6 Eastern. The NFL Divisional Playoffs presented by TurboTax Live on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Oh, this is delicious. So Peter King, NBCSports.com, Football Morning in America, is joining us live. So yesterday when the story broke, I said, you know, the Philadelphia, I like the Chargers job, but Philadelphia is probably the second best job. And then, you know, it's interesting. And then I hear Jeffrey Lurie talking last night, and he said, well, he didn't really deserve to be fired. And I thought, wait a minute. So Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl, had one bad year fired. Andy Reid got to a Super Bowl, one bad year fired. Chip Kelly winning record fired. And I thought, is it a great job if Tom Coughlin got three bad years in a row? Is it a good job? Or are the expectations there, frankly, unrealistic, Peter?
It's a really good question, Colin. I think there are very high expectations there, but I think there's something else at play here. The Philadelphia Eagles walked out of the locker room after winning that Super Bowl against New England. And in the next 35 months, they're four games under 500. The quarterback doesn't want to be there anymore. They fired the coach. Their offensive coordinator is left, long gone for Indianapolis. This is not the same franchise as it was when it won the Super Bowl. And I think anybody who looks at this job, that plus the fact some of the contracts that are going to be draining their salary cap. I disagree with you that it's a great job. I think there's two or three jobs that are significantly better than this one, including one that everybody seems to be laughing at, and that's the Houston Texans. If you have a top five quarterback playing at the peak of his game, I'll take all the other issues that a franchise has. There's not many teams that ever have a coaching vacancy opening, really, when they have a quarterback as good as Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, I mean, Green Bay is the last one, and that worked out real well for Matt LaFleur. So I was almost shocked, and they build big casinos because they're mostly right and guys like me are wrong, but I was shocked at the lack of respect for Cleveland. They're a 10-point underdog. This is a team that has not lost a game this year. When they've tied or won the turnover battle, I think they'll be really competitive. And frankly, I have issues with Kansas City Not playing Mahomes in week 17, that is a lot, Peter. That is a lot of rust.
I mean, Colin, you look at two things here. It has been 10 weeks since the team with the best record in football blew anybody out. 10 weeks since they won a game by double digits. They have been playing nail biters for 2 months. Number two, you know, I understand why coaches do this, because they don't want to get their players hurt in games that don't mean anything. But, you know, the road is littered with teams that have played lousy when their players, many of them, have been given 3 weeks off. And the Kansas City Chiefs, you know, ask Tony Dungy how it worked out, you know, with Manny, and I forget what year it was. Or ask Mike McCarthy how it worked out with Aaron Rodgers, you know, the year that they were so good. And they took 3 weeks off, and they came back after 20 days off, and they played lousy. If I had been Andy Reid, again, I don't know the health of his players. So it could be that there is a very good reason why they did this. But I do not like when you're not playing well and you've scored 14 points against the Atlanta Falcons to then have 3 weeks off and then play a team that is a bizarrely hot team right now, and that's the Cleveland Browns.
So, you know, it's interesting. I never bought into this narrative that Lamar Jackson couldn't win playing behind. His winning percentage in the NFL is 81%. Bill Parcells is 58, and he's one of the best coaches I've seen. I think the kid gets better every year. I think his red zone play got significantly better this year. I think his first year he looked skinny. Second year he looked thicker. I just think he's just, you know, with kids, I don't ask for massive leaps. I'm looking for small, little improvements year to year, and he's still one of the youngest quarterbacks in the league. A lot of people like Baltimore this weekend against Buffalo. What is kind of your takeaway on what you saw and going forward for Lamar Jackson and his future?
You know, Lamar Jackson, I think there's a lot of people, me included, in the last year or so have been saying, man, you shouldn't expose him so much, you know, to big hits, especially, you know, from linebackers, you know, once you hit the open field or big safeties. But I've come to the conclusion now, Colin, that some players you can morph into more pocket quarterbacks, or guys like Russell Wilson who are really not looking to run, but they'll get out on the outside and throw on the run. But I believe that you should not try to change Lamar Jackson at all. He is so excellent as a runner that if his shelf life as a pocket quarterback is 16 or 18 years, and his shelf life as a running quarterback is 12 or 13 years, and he's great at it, I'd say give me the shorter time with this great player playing the way he's playing right now.
Yeah, I totally agree. Listen, sometimes you buy a product. It's not a 15-year product. You know, it's a 2-year product. There's a reason people lease
cars. Remember when RG3, Colin?
Yeah.
Colin, remember when RG3 wanted to be a pocket quarterback? His father came out and said, hey, we want him to be a pocket quarterback. We want a long life with him. He was crappy as a pocket quarterback.
Yeah.
He should have stayed exactly the way he was.
Yeah.
And so now look at him. He's kind of hanging on to a backup job. And, hey, he's a good backup in the NFL.
Yeah, listen.
But if I were him, I would have played the way he played as a rookie.
Yeah, he's winning 81% of his games is Lamar. If I only get 9 years with him, I retain my job, my staff, and a lot of division titles if that's the case. So, listen, the Steelers don't fire coaches, Mike Tomlin's safe. But in the last decade, the brand is bigger than their reality. They have 3 playoff wins in the decade, 1 over A.J. McCarron and 1 over Matt Moore. And the 1 over Alex Smith, I don't believe they scored a touchdown. To me, I thought Big Ben, it's caught up with him. He's not a 38-year-old Breeze or Brady. He doesn't take care of himself like that. That's not who he is. That's fine. But I felt he looked old. And I feel like if you don't change stuff.
Me too.
I just think it's time. I really do. It's time to move on from Ben. I don't want to be reactionary, but he hasn't taken great care of himself. He's not Brady. He's not even Breeze. Is it reasonable to say, do you think Pittsburgh will at least consider that?
I think that what Pittsburgh needs to do, and I don't know if they will do this, because they do not respond well to pressure from the outside. I think what Mike Tomlin needs to do is to call Ben in and say, we want you to continue as our quarterback, but we want you in better shape. We want you to be, frankly, in the best shape of your life when you come to training camp at the end of July this year. See if he's willing to do that. I don't know if he is. He seems to still want to play, but I don't really want the 2020 Ben Roethlisberger as my quarterback next year. I would rather have a more modern quarterback. I agree with you, Colin. He looks old. He looks slow. I think he needs to get in better shape, and I think he needs to be, if he's going to come back, I think he needs to be more nimble and a little bit more mobile.
When certain stories start stacking up, I tend to believe smoke, there's fire. I saw another story this morning, Tua, Deshaun Watson, Miami. Do you buy Chris Mortensen this weekend? Deshaun Watson, Miami's a possibility. Deshaun would be open to it. For stories like that to keep coming out, it tells me Miami, somebody's talking in Miami. I kind of buy they may move off Tua. Does it sound crazy?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Look, I trust everything that Chris Mortensen says. To me, he's one of the best information guys in any sport ever. So I don't deny that this is a possibility, but I would only say one thing. Nick Caserio's been on this job for 10 minutes. He's the guy who's going to be responsible for trying to put Humpty Dumpty back together again. Give him some time. And give this story time to settle down. R-E-L-A-X. I mean, it's one of those deals that he's one of the best quarterbacks, you know, in the game. And during the golden age of quarterbacks, Houston has got to try to fix this. Has to. I don't care what trade you could make. You will never get fair value for this guy. Yeah. You just won't.
Yeah.
So it's up to Nick Caserio to calm the waters. Everybody take a deep breath, disappear for a while, and see if they can fix it.
Peter King, NBCSports.com. He's got his Cal Bear sweater on, looking sharp as always. Peter, appreciate it. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, Colin.
Everybody wants to keep their home assets and family safe. Go to SimplySafe.com/Colin. Free security camera if you call today. SimplySafe.com/Colin. Joy Taylor with the news.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, speaking of Tua, he's quickly become one of the most popular players in the NFL, according to this season's jersey sales on Fanatics. He was the top-selling rookie, beating out fellow quarterbacks Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert, who came in second and third. And he finished third overall behind Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady for the top-selling jersey in the league.
Wow.
Lamar Jackson and Russell Wilson rounded out the top five.
I'm amazed Brady still sells his jersey, because I think last year he was one or two. And, I mean, how many Patriot jerseys could you have a Tom?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes those numbers are a little skewed because it's merchandise, too. So I could see why Tom Brady would have the top-selling, like, overall merchandise, like shirts and everything else.
Right.
This jersey this year makes sense because it's a new jersey. If you have every single Tom Brady jersey from every single year, you got to get this one too because it's a new jersey. This isn't terribly surprising.
Tua is
very high from a high profile school.
And he was also, how many times did we talk about Tua in the last year? He got.
Right. Plus Joe Burrow got injured.
Yeah.
The Chargers fan base is not the biggest around the
apathetic,
country.
Yeah.
So this does make sense. But I do think this is a little bit telling. Like, Tua is a star.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No question.
Like, I wouldn't say Justin Herbert was a star coming in. And even though I love Joe Burrow, Joe Burrow really only had 1 year of stardom at LSU before coming into the draft. Well, so we had a little bit more of a book on Tua.
Well, when you are referred to by one name.
Correct.
Nobody says Joe. It's Joe Burrow. Nobody says Herbert. It's Justin Herbert. Well, you just say Tua. That was like Tebow. Nobody said just Vince. It was Vince Young. Like Tebow. I mean, Johnny Manziel was Johnny Football. Like, when you can go by one name in America, like Cher, Sting, Stern,
Prince.
Yeah, I mean, there is some value that he comes from Bama. He's Tua.
I do think that everything that's happening with Tua is going to get very interesting over the next couple weeks.
6-3-9 starts, but it's his lack of big play potential that worries people.
But here's the thing. We're not going to see anything more from Tua. That's and right. All that stuff that's all these rumors of what's going on with the Texans and the possible movement, all that has to go down before the draft, which is not that far away.
Yeah.
Just a few months.
Yeah.
So all those moving parts have to fall in place because the Texans are going to want to know, if they do make that trade, who they're drafting with all of those picks. So all this really, if it's going to go down, is going to happen relatively soon. So the Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy has been getting a lot of attention for open head coaching positions this year, and Patrick Mahomes is putting in a good word for him.
His track record speaks for itself. I mean, the type of guy, the type of man he is, the type of way he can control and be the leader of a locker room, and the way that he coaches and the schemes that he brings to us. I mean, if he doesn't, people are crazy. So, I mean, for us, obviously we want to have him here, but we know he deserves to have that job, the opportunity to go lead his own franchise and his own team.
He's been there a while. This is what happens. You work for Andy Reid, you do about 3 years of work, service, and then you get a job. It's just like...
Well, he was in the conversations last year also. He's been interviewed by the Jets, Lions, Falcons, Chargers, and the Jaguars. Pro Football Talk reported over the weekend that some people around the league think that he may not land a job and that he has told some people that he wants to stay with the Chiefs until he finds the perfect job.
Well, that's underrated. That is something that is underrated. If you were, let's say you were the number, what do they call the number two chef? Not the head chef.
Sous chef.
Like the sous chef. And you're at a great restaurant and you love your job and you are like the talk of the restaurant culinary industry. Just wait. There's nothing wrong with being a great two for a while. They're like, first of all, he played, he made good money, he's making good money, he's got a reputation. Like, Kansas City is not a place I'd bolt from.
No, especially if you enjoy what you do. No, obviously, if you have aspirations of being a head coach, obviously, then, you know, you do want to take that step. But getting into that space is a very tricky move. Now, you're going to be able to get a coordinator job again, even if you fail as a head coach, if you have the reputation.
Here's the one that makes sense. Let's say Urban Meyer doesn't take Jacksonville.
Okay.
That's the one it works because he can go there and say, oh, no, I've seen the star quarterback come in. I've lived this life in Kansas City. I know how to play him a couple of games. We have a veteran. We'll keep Gardner Minshew for a year. We'll keep a guy that can win games. I've done this star out of college, huge talent, needs to work slowly. And he also... That Jacksonville, if Urban doesn't go, feels like a good fit. Like, if I was an owner, I'd say his story matches what I'm looking for.
The only thing that concerns me about Jacksonville is Shad Khan's comments. I don't need a meddling owner. It never works. It doesn't make any sense. I don't need the
Well,
owner
Steinbrenner
in on personnel.
Meddled. It worked a little bit with New York. But they don't have a salary cap, so
there's a lot of different factors.
He went and bought the best players.
Yes, exactly. I don't know that I necessarily love Jacksonville overall. I mean, look, there's not an abundance of these jobs available in the world, right? So they're all good jobs when you look at it. But to this Pro Football Talk report's point, you want to wait for a position where, one, you know you're going to have longevity, two, your reputation completely precedes itself, and you're in a situation where you have pieces in place, like a good owner and a franchise quarterback and stuff to work with. So Justin Fields couldn't recreate the magic from his semifinal performance to finish the season with the national championship, but he is still dealing with the injury from that game against Clemson, and he's not using that as an excuse for the loss.
At the end of the day, I was able to play, and we didn't get the job done, so I don't think my injury, had an effect. I mean, of course, I could have been healthier, but I was healthy enough, and I was able to be out there.
Yeah,
we just weren't able to get the job done.
Yeah, I don't take anything away from it. He was great against Clemson. He wasn't good enough against Bama. I think he's the number two pick. But also, I like what he's done, and Zach Wilson hasn't. He's played in a lot of big games. I've seen him now against Northwestern's defense. They won a bowl game. Clemson's defense, Bama's defense. So he's played against NFL guys.
There was a couple throws yesterday that weren't great, but overall, I think his body of work speaks for itself at this point.
Yeah, I think he's
a
great prospect.
He obviously, has to develop a little bit more and gets to the NFL level, as they all do. But yeah, I don't see how he's not the consensus number two quarterback. And his performance against Clemson was amazing. Look, Alabama's a great team. They're by far the best team in the country.
You're playing.
They showed that throughout the season. You played less games.
Playing from behind.
You're playing from behind.
It's just, I thought he had a really impressive performance against Clemson last night. Little bit of a clunker.
He doesn't play defense, though. And DeVonta Smith was 3 touchdowns in the first half, got injured. So it was not on Justin Fields yesterday. I feel like I've seen enough from him to say that.
Yeah.
I mean, draft narratives change throughout this kind of part of the year when everyone's done playing and you start pulling up old film and, oh, maybe Zach Wilson's better or whatever. I think that Justin Fields' performance against Clemson will have a lasting effect.
Yep, I agree. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
Beyond dominating, there's another thing Nick Saban has done, and I think it's absolutely phenomenal. Bill O'Brien is going to be their next coordinator, according to reports. The legacy of Saban and what he does to coaches and for coaches next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
At Jersey Mike's, app is short for appetizing. Save 25% in your order with the code MIKES25. Only when you use Jersey Mike's app. The code is MIKES25, January 14th through 17th. Jersey Mike's, be a sub above. Well, Nick Saban, according to a report, Bill O'Brien's the leading candidate to get the job. It's amazing how he has rehabilitated careers. Nobody wanted to hire Sark. Nobody wanted to hire Butch Jones. Nobody wanted to hire Lane Kiffin. Nobody wants to hire Bill O'Brien. Part of Saban's legacy is it's like a coaching rehabilitation center, man. He takes guys in. He takes big risks. I mean, nobody wanted Lane Kiffin. Nobody wanted him. Look what Sark just got, the Texas job. That's a top five college football job. So good for Sark and good for Nick Saban. He takes big swings and he changes lives. And with that, Andrew Whitworth, 15 years in the NFL, Rams left tackle. They go to Green Bay, joining us live. You were part of Nick Saban's first recruiting class. You didn't know who Nick Saban was, right? He wasn't Alabama Nick. He'd kind of, you know, he hadn't done the NFL stuff yet. Did you think he was a little intense the first time you met him?
Very intense. I can remember being a freshman and showing up right when a meeting started one time, and that was the worst mistake I ever made, and I never forgot it, that's for sure. But I go way back in the tree, Colin. I mean, Adam Gase was my apartment roommate when I showed up at LSU campus, and Freddie Kitchens was also our other GA. So I go way back in the Saban tree of coaches.
Why do you think, you know, Saban is seen as a hard-driving guy, but he really does. I mean, I watched him last night. He's loved by his players, Andrew, and nobody drives his players as hard, but there is something about that team. And is Nick one of those guys, he's grumpier to us than real life?
Yeah, I really believe so. I actually think one of the funniest things about Nick Saban is people consider him this hard, tough coach, but the reality is he's the biggest players coach on the planet. He does a great job of making sure that the coaches are always under stress, and really the people who are working around the players are always under constant stress to be better, but that the players are his best friends and that they look to him for everything they do and everything they do in life and in football and everything else. He has a really tight relationship with them and really almost makes it like it's him and the players and then everyone else around.
I've heard that before. That's what they say. He's brutal on the coaches. He's great to the players. By the way, you're a left tackle. He's a defensive genius. Did he ever yell at you at practice?
He would get really upset if we picked up some of his blitzes or some of his Maka A, Maka B defensive calls on third down. We got to figure him out over the years, and we'd pick one up, and he would just be so livid that there's no way we would know that, you know, and all these things. And, it was a constant battle with him. You know, the thing about Nick is he loves you to jab right back at him. He likes that kind of mentality and demeanor, and he knows that you're a football player when you got a little fight in you. And so he would always love us getting in arguments over whether we should be picking up things or not.
I love that. I know Nick a little bit, and I do think he's got a great heart. I think he's got a little more personality. Well, he has to. He's a great recruiter. So he's got a little salesmanship in him. I've been around him. He can be funny. There's no question he can be funny. Believe it or not, Nick Saban can actually be kind of funny, right?
Oh, there's no question. He's a hilarious guy. I've got plenty of Rolodexes and Nick Saban stories that can get you going, but unfortunately, I can't share most of those publicly.
Okay, now you're come back from an injury. You're going to Lambeau. Are you concerned as a team? L.A., SoFi Stadium, now Lambeau. Has it been discussed?
I mean, it's obviously a challenge to go on the road and win in the playoffs anywhere you go. And cold weather is not fun for anybody. It doesn't matter who's playing in the game, and it makes it harder. It makes those hits hurt a little more. But I think that's really got more to do with just being tough and understanding the kind of style of football it takes to go win on the road. And, I just don't think that it's one of those things that teams should use as an excuse. I mean, you either just tough it up and go play tough playoff football or you don't. New Orleans is really successful in their dome as well. And it's not dome air that's causing people to lose. It's because when you play on the road, it's hard to win.
So as a left tackle, you played in Cincinnati in lousy weather for years. For you as a run blocker, and we expect Cam Akers to get carries, did you actually like a little colder weather? Do you think as you a running team, it can be a benefit?
Yeah, because I think if you're a running football team, you've played tough physical football all season long to get where you are. And I think you welcome the challenge to go and try and run the football and play in nasty weather and what a difference that can make to your football team to be physical and play that style of game.
So John Wolford now, from what we understand, will start. Jared Goff's got the broken thumb. It was swelling. We see it on television. Your kind of takeaway, is it hard for you and the offensive line? New quarterback, new tempo, new style, little different game. Is it a challenge?
Yeah, I think anytime you change the quarterback, each one has a skill set that makes them good at what they do. And so you have a little bit of a different style that you may call plays with and understand what they're going to be good at and what they're going to do well in the game. So obviously during that game in Seattle, it was obviously a big change to go from kind of a guy who's going to move around a little more probably with your calls to going back to Jared. It's not necessarily that one's better than the other in the sense of play calls. It's just that it's different from the plan you had going in. And so obviously with Jared, we've won a lot of football games and we know how to play with him, but it is still a change in a game when you have to do something like that. So we look forward to having a little more, clarity as far as who's up and healthy and getting the opportunity to go to Green Bay and try and win.
For the record, the defense for the Rams is spectacular. It's been so smartly drafted on the back end. You've faced that defense at practice for years. What makes this defense better than 2-3 years ago?
I just think that you don't know what they're going to do to you all the time. I think that with the ability with Jalen Ramsey to kind of be on the field and Aaron Donald to be on the field, and you can place those guys that are two really special elite players in certain places that kind of make the defense have to understand if they're going to worry about those two guys, the rest of the schemes that you're going to apply is not going to make it easy for them to attack the other parts of the field. And those two guys kind of eliminate their spots. And then you see some young guys come up as playmakers, whether it be Darius Williams, whether it be Leonard Floyd, whether it be different guys on the defense and Jordan Fuller at safety, who have come up and kind of made those kind of changes. And then you got a guy like John Zonson, who's leading it all from the back end, who's just a tremendous leader, a tremendous player, and a guy who keeps it all organized. It really makes it tough to pick where's the spot of this defense that you're going to attack and think that's going to be your successful spot.
Couple minutes left. You have the third graded offensive line in the NFL behind Cleveland is one of the highest graded and the Colts. Do you feel a little pressure this weekend, maybe using a backup quarterback, that the O-line will decide this puppy?
I think that we realize that that's really been, you look at our success here in the 4 years I've been here in L.A. with Sean McVay, it's really come down to that. And I think we've come to the realization that that's what it is. The offensive line's got to go out and play well and win the football game for us. You look at our playoff run in 18 is the same thing. We ran the football really well against the Cowboys, ran it good against the Saints. And regardless of whether we were throwing it well or able to move it through the air as much, we were prepared to play physical football and get ourselves to an opportunity to play in a Super Bowl. And I think we realize that same expectations coming to us again this season. How can we go out and be effective in doing our jobs? And the level we do it at will dictate our ability to have success, especially when you're playing with what we just talked about, a great defense. If you can run the football well, limit other teams' opportunities, you got a chance.
39 years old, oldest offensive lineman in the league, injured, came back. Here he goes on the road in Lambeau. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Andrew. We'll talk soon.
Hey, Colin, I appreciate it, man. I'm looking forward to it.
You bet. Won a national title with Nick Saban at LSU. Saban has to have a sense of humor because you can't recruit like that. He's the best recruiter in the history of college football.
He's got you know, the commercials.
No, maybe. I mean, Nick,
he catches the little jokes on the commercials.
I've seen Nick be funny. Black Rifle Company, Black Rifle Coffee Company, veteran owned. Purchase at www.blackriflecoffee.com/herd. Please use the code HERD, 20% off your purchase and your first coffee club order. Veteran owned, serving premium coffee to people who love America. Black Rifle Coffee. Again, the code HERD. Hour 3 next.